All right. Many, many blessings. Here we are once again. Another couple of weeks has passed. Seems like a lot longer. Lots is happening nowadays, and I hope everyone is happy, enjoying themselves tremendously. And we've got another wonderful Q&A today, and if anyone is on the computer and wants to ask a question, of course you're very welcome to. And before we get started, I just want to take a few deep breaths. Let's all just enjoy a few beautiful, deep breaths. Just breathing gently and softly. And let's just remember what is important. So just tune into why you joined this superhero training and what is your mission in life? What do you want to achieve? What is your vision? What do you actually want? It's good to know what we want. It's good to remind ourselves of what we desire deeply. What is our true, pure desires? So just tune into your pure desires. And imagine yourself standing on the other side of the hill, having gone through all kinds of things and reached the other side. And how do you feel on the other side? Now that you've achieved all the things you want, everything that you deeply desire, how do you feel? So we're just going to tune into that for a moment. Reminding ourselves of the wonderful, important things in life. Yay. So how's it going, Brother Nicholas? What's going on? What's the latest news from the big volcanic island?
Going absolutely wonderful, bro. And feeling totally amazing. And it's, I guess what's going on is just how good things can be if you'll just be honest enough to follow your feelings and take initiative and have the courage to make changes in your life when they're being called for, and go where the flow is of your life is flowing and really calling you, and new opportunities are opening up, and totally hit the ground running over here. Just been facilitating for 5 days and managing a large group of people and lots of productivity and fascinating social dynamics, all kinds of, situations coming up, conflict, resolution, and, just really, really, really good high vibes, loads and loads and loads of Angel Qigong, been teaching Angel Qigong 3 times a day, 3 classes a day, and, just been bathing in that, the power of that practice, and really being reminded of how important the practice is, and not just to do the early morning one, but to keep dropping in for those three breaths over and over and over and over throughout the day. Because when we don't, just the nature of the times that we're in, especially this astrological configuration, as we begin the new astrological year, Aries is the first sign in the astrological calendar. Pisces is the last, so we basically finished the last year with the end of Pisces, and this new moon energy is the beginning of the Aries. And these three moons, Aries, Taurus, and Gemini, tremendously defining moons for this year, for the rest of this year. Very, very, very important. And yeah, just feeling a lot of Plutonic energy in the mix, a lot of Mars energy in the mix. So stuff is coming up, deep, powerful things are surfacing. And of course, we're in a community environment over here, and so the natural friction of community social dynamics just provides the perfect opportunity for witness and process this stuff. And I just actually came from a sort of a conflict resolution meeting, which the owners of this center that I'm doing a bit of consultancy for, they asked me to take care of, and these two guys yesterday, I actually witnessed it, were really in each other's face, and not particularly elevated individuals with the tools that superheroes have for dealing with stuff. But it just really reinforced the power of the practices that we recommend in superhero training, and if you'll have the courage to apply them in these practical ongoing situations, how quickly harmony can be achieved, because there's just this natural yearning for that from us all, and we can move on and forward in our lives. So yeah, a lot of excitement, feeling good, feeling very, 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 very grounded and solid, and enjoying they reckon in the Hawaiian Islands that the Big Island is the root chakra, and that the Kauai is the crown, and it definitely really suits the old farm boy / Viking in me to be in a really rootsy kind of environment. It allows me to ground in full power in real life situations. And yeah, just really, really, really giving thanks and feeling the power of the practice, and lots of affirmations on super health and abundant wealth, and good times, brother. What about you?
Yeah, I'm feeling absolutely wonderful. It's such a profound morning, just like you were saying, the amount of the amount of good feelings and joy and wonder and, this the grace of life can just be so strong and so beautiful and, so solid, really. And it's just a choice whether or not we tune into that beautiful divine presence or whether we, get distracted in trivial things. And so I've just been really enjoying the beauty on all levels, and feeling really, really good, and, just thinking about how we can serve more people. And, I've been also tuning into the fact that our state of consciousness, the state of consciousness that we have, is actually the most powerful thing we do in the world. So, just focusing on having that high state and then letting that take care of itself. It's, it's just much more liberating that way rather than trying to make things happen and force things to happen, which is a bit stressful, can be a bit stressful anyway. So I've just been really, just keeping the higher frequencies and just allowing the grace to, happen of its own, and just watch things happening automatically as they do anyway. So it's been lovely, absolutely lovely, absolutely lovely. And I'm just enjoying. Happy to be on the call today, and also, best ever, really.
Yeah.
And And I know we have Taylor call on the phone. Taylor, how's it going? And tell us all about any astrological things that you're aware of. Any expansion on what Brother Nick said. It'd be lovely.
Yes, well, happy spring. Happy spring. And, yeah, spring is really fast-forwarded into an instant summer here on the East Coast. We've been enjoying balmy 84-degree temperatures when, you know, daffodils are coming up, which it's completely, I've just never seen anything like it, nor has anyone else. People are kind of just walking around. You know, everyone loves the fact that it's 84 degrees and they can go right from winter coats into bathing suits on one hand. But on the other hand, you know, you kind of just stand, you can actually stand and watch everything grow. You can just you could stand right by a blossom and watch it go from a teeny bud to a complete full on, you know, wide open blossom. And also daffodils shriveling in the 84 degrees temperatures because they're really made for 50 or 60, which are the normal temperatures here this time of year. And, but, you know, there's nothing like spring. There's nothing like spring in the East Coast or any place that's, you know, come out of a dormant cycle into rebirth to really have you feel that upward momentum and energy that spring is. It, you know, just to be able to walk around. I mean, to me, it's like heaven on earth. I'm just walking around. Just everywhere I look is this explosion of life, full on, full out. You know, the air is just filled with pollen and perfume of blossoms and bees are buzzing, and it's just like, and, you know, the thing that's amazing is you really get, like, that's what's happening inside of me. That right here is that amount of energy, that amount of creation energy and potential, I could tap into just right like that. I can just breathe it in. I can ride on it. So I've just been really using that momentum and energy to complete a lot of projects, start a lot of projects, and just be in such appreciation for the wonder that nature is. It's just astounding to me that every year, you know, there it is, a tree which is standing there brown and dead and looking like a stick can suddenly burst forth with this full-on display of blossoms and color like nothing else. I mean, it's just the color that nature can produce is just, it's just mind-boggling. I mean, and every spring it gets better and better, you know, like the more aware and conscious I am and the more I can see and the more I can take in and be in appreciation, you know, just the better it is. So, I mean, it's almost impossible for me to stay inside. You know, it's like, okay, you know, I'll come in, do a little bit of work, but I got to get right back out there. I mean, and then every time I go out, there's like a whole new palette of blossoming occurring. That's astounding. It's astounding. Heaven really is on earth. I don't care what anyone says. And, and you know, it's been really interesting just to watch that level of growth and manifestation occurring. Like, I can pretty much say something I want, even absent-mindedly, even not, you know, with like a focused intent, just kind of as a casual comment, and within hours, it's there. It's either arrived at my doorstep or someone calls me and says, oh, by the way, you know, do you want blank? I mean, it's an unbelievable thing to watch, the level of manifestation that occurs, and that's just not even really being focused on it. So I really encourage anyone that is kind of not really, you know, it's easy when you're in Hawaii to kind of like, you know, because Hawaii always looks kind of like a postcard. I mean, if you're super, super tapped in, well, then, you know, palmaria trees lose their blossoms and, you know, they look different. But you know, here you can't, there's no mistaking what's really going on all around. And so, but I just really encourage everyone to really recognize this is so huge. The opportunity right now, like Nick was saying, you know, cosmically, astrologically. I mean, just when you look up and you see Venus, like, almost like a spotlight. You know, it's like, what on earth is that? I mean, you know, this new moon and just everything that's occurring moment by moment, day by day, hasn't ever occurred before, and the level of energy and cosmic downpouring of information is completely and totally off the charts. That's all I can say. And, you know, so, I mean, I don't know if there's a whole lot more to say about the new moon, about what we're, the time period we're in, except that it's like nothing else that's ever happened, and we're blessed to not only be in it, but to be awake in it, and to have the opportunity to create our life however we so desire. That's really what we're being offered in this big platter being served up to us from the cosmic universe. And there, it's kind of like, all right, here you go. Here's a canvas. What do you want to do? What do you want to paint? How do you want it to look? And if we're seeing it any other way than that, we're missing the boat. Like, we can really completely and totally scrap everything we know ourselves to be in an instant and opt for a whole entirely different model. You know, it's really like you can just trade yourself in. You know, like, all right, this model is, I'm done with this, you know. I'm not really into this, that, and the other thing. And here's what I want. You know, this is the upgrade. Give me it.
Well said. Can I just add a little expansion to that as well? Just what I've been experiencing just lately, Michael and Taylor, because I've been doing so much teaching of the angel Qigong, and like a lot of the stuff that I teach, and the some of the books that I've written, and the systems that I've designed, specifically Sun Pop, and definitely Angel Qigong. I get the flash of inspiration and absolute clarity in a download for the whole system. And then it's through the years of actually practicing it that the real richness and power makes itself known to me. And I've been practicing Angel Qigong a lot, as I said, over the last few days, this last 5 days. And because of the different components in the sort of the more advanced practice of it, what I'm realizing is that when you are able to use your imagination, in a grandiose way, in a powerful, powerful, powerful way, and what I term and coined from studying Joseph Campbell's stuff is actually using the mythical imagination. And what I mean by that is that within our normal way of living, our normal way of perceiving the world, the normal way we relate to people and to each other, to the world around us, that way of relating is just by its very nature extremely limited. And usually only actually exercises a tiny fragment of your innate capacity, because you're just basically using the conscious mind, which is, largely dominated by the left brain. And if we're involved with logistics and practicalities and computers and numbers and time and deadlines and all of this stuff, that really takes up a tremendous amount of energy in our lives, then we're only using this facet, this sort of singular area of our own greatness, our own psyche, namely the conscious mind. And so it's when we, in the practices, that we move into these this eternal sense of self. And in Angel Qigong, of course, we're exploring the family constellation of souls, and so we're seeing ourselves as a soul, like a star in a constellation of stars, with our ancestors. And so immediately your mind is opened to this cosmology of the cosmology of our being. And then you're also embracing the angelic realm, interfacing with the realm of the angels, and embracing the animal part of the soul, the elemental part of the soul. And the imagination, once you start working the imagination, orienting your mind in this way, then the imagination forms appear in the imagination, which are symbols of communication from a higher awareness, which gives you guidance and clear direction in terms of how to move forward with your superficial life or your human life. And it's just so empowering to get out of that little baked bean tin size way of using our greatness and into this really unlimited arena which is the domain of consciousness. It's infinite and eternal. And I've found myself over and over and over and over the last 5 days repeatedly saying, imagination, feelings, breath. Imagination, feelings, breath. Imagination, feelings, breath. And no matter what we're doing, we can be imagining whatever we want. No matter what we're doing, through that imagination, we can be feeling, experiencing the feelings of what we're imagining, as long as we're breathing in this way. And so I've really, 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 really been enjoying this concentrated focus on this practice over these last few days and being able to exercise these greater parts of my own psyche. It's been absolutely wonderful.
Yeah, it just goes to show if we put the time in and really go for it, then it's just wonderful. So anyone listening to this, you know, we're only having beautiful experiences because of practice, doing things that we love again and again and again. It's very simple. And I was just kind of cracking up when Taylor was speaking a minute ago because I wanted to say to Taylor, so no complaints then, Taylor. Because you know, it's like a lot of people just spend their whole time complaining about what's going on in their life, and you know, that's what they get. It's drama, drama, drama. So you know, it's wonderful. Absolutely anything is possible, especially in spring. I've been feeling the spring energies here. It's a joy to actually have the sunshine out again after all these storms. And, you know, just take advantage of everything because it's there to be enjoyed. You know, that's the whole point of life. So let's just take a couple of questions. I've got one for Uncle Nicholas, Brother Nick. So question for you is, this is from Catherine in England, UK. She says, I'd like to know a little bit more about tightening the diaphragm and pelvic diaphragm during the breath meditation. I have to admit, I find it a bit distracting, but I've persevered so far. Can you explain what this does, please? It might help my focus, concentration, nishchay to know.
Okay, yeah, I'd love to. So basically, if you're feeling that anything's a distraction, from the essence of or the enjoyment of the practice, then don't overemphasize it. But that being said, the reason why that particular meditation, and it's one of various meditations that we're offering you during this training. And we do encourage you always to, you know, to focus on that which you enjoy most, which you feel is the most beneficial, the most nourishing, the most fulfilling. It's not a one you know, everyone has to do, you know, exactly this. It's we offer a pastiche of very powerful practices, and we know that some people are drawn to, you know, various different aspects of the training. So feel free to make any fine-tune adjustments that you want to anything that any of these breathing practices I give you. But this one is integrated in very early on in the training. It is specifically designed to help us develop intense concentration and focus, which any spiritual school or a teacher is going to encourage you to develop as a student, and really to focus on that absolutely for about a year. Really, basically the first year of any ancient traditional school that is going to be gifting you with practices that are going to allow you to access very, 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 very powerful parts of yourself, realizes that in order to deal with that power, you need to be very, very stable. And that means being able to focus your mind and hold that focus in a gentle way and turn the focus or refocus when it starts to drift or dissipate or lose its shape. Now, that particular practice is has this embracing of diaphragmatic breathing in there. Now, that the emphasis on the physical aspect of breathing in meditation diminishes as your ability to do it improves. So, for instance, let's take myself or Brother Michael as examples, who have done thousands of hours of meditation. We don't have to focus on the physical aspect of breathing. It happens on its own. You don't have to overemphasize that once you've developed a certain ability to do it. But the reason why it's in there and the reason why it is challenging is because you have to breathe, you have to hold, you have to lock a little, you have to feel a sense of compression, and then you release. You see? There's like four or five little facets within one very, very, very simple breathing system. What does that do? It gives you the ability to concentrate and focus on detail, okay? And train your mind to focus on what you want it to do for as long as you want it to be focused on it. The Western mind is like an agitated kind of a monkey that, you know, wants to do this, wants to do that, wants to go over there, wants to run around, jump up and down. What's going on now? You know, it's extremely easily distracted. The Eastern mind is a lot naturally more still and serene. But ours is, you know, very inquisitive and what have you. So you give it something to focus on, but you're kind of training that wild part of yourself with that practice. So it has a beneficial effect physiologically, compressing the breath momentarily. Lots of the immortal yogis and all of the yogic teachings embrace breathing strategies involving breath retention for their physiological benefit and for their psycho-spiritual benefit. And so that's, you know, part of the reason why we have these things structured the way they are. But all the time, you are being honored by us as a sovereign being, and we are not your gurus who will hit you with a big stick if you don't do the thing exactly the way we say it. And the technique is always secondary to the feeling and the spirit of the essence of the practice. But early on, in the beginning stages of this training, and while you're developing the foundation of focus and familiarizing yourself with the inner terrain of your own psyche, you really can't do too much very, very, very basic, nitty-gritty, ultra-simple, sort of mechanical practices as the core kind of building strategy so that you have a structure within yourself that is able to really, 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 really benefit from some of the more advanced versions of those practices, which is essentially simpler and less emphasis on any physical components and much more of an emphasis on the psycho-spiritual facet of it. So imagination, feelings, and breath, let the spirit of the experience and the essence of the experience be the main thing. Don't get hung up on the technical details, and really, 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 really open your heart in love and gratitude to the amazing spiritual goodness that is flowing from life through the depths of your being, and you are unlocking all of these beautiful portals within you in order to be able to express that gracefully and magnificently in these very exciting times we're all living in.
Yay. Yeah, it's often the side benefit that you get. You know, some of these practices in themselves have an immediate effect, and some of the practices, they develop other things like concentration, which is absolutely essential. A bit like we went to school, apparently, other than being brainwashed, was to learn how to think. You know, so you have to learn language to know how to think. So just practicing, focusing on anything helps you be able to focus on wonderful things, because we introduce you to lots of wonderful things to bring your awareness to. So once you have that concentration power, then you can go really, really deep, which is very powerful and very beautiful. So we've got another question here for me, actually, for Michael. So about the inner self-image meditation. A week of once a day, but still no self-image at all. Imagine that. I see the corridor, the stairs, sometimes the door and the light, but little of myself. A hint of an outline or a face, but no more. I'm usually quite visual and see all sorts of stuff behind my eyelids, especially during guided meditation. Any ideas as to what might allow me to see myself more fully? Oh, what a wonderful question. So let me just explain about this inner self-image thing a little bit, and just a little bit of history. How I came about this thing was I was sitting on the beach one day in Kapaa in the winter when I just got here on the island. I've been here about 4 months, 3 or 4 months, and I had various lifestyle changes, and I was actually feeling really weird at that time. Felt kind of slightly depressed, a little bit odd, like unsure of myself, and, you know, just kind of like, what the hell is going on? And I was sitting on, I used to go down to the beach at like 6 or 7 o'clock. It was winter time, and it was super, super windy on that beach every day. And the sand was like blowing away, and I had to sort of wrap myself up. And it was, you know, the ocean was choppy, the water was cold, and it was, you know, it was just weird. And I remember actually I was doing a lot of Gerald O'Donnell's meditations as well at that time. So anyway, there I was sitting on the beach, sort of feeling weird, getting attacked by the wind, and I was very disturbed, and I remember calling out to God, saying, please, God, you know, what the hell is going on? How come I've done all this years and years and years of spiritual practice, and I'm still feeling weird, you know? How come I'm feeling like this? What's the solution? What's the magic? What's the magic thing? What's the secret key? What am I missing here? So I was having this sort of conversation with my heart open and just really, you know, open to receive the guidance, you know. I was quite desperate, actually, and I was just, you know, surrendering. And what happened was I felt myself leave the body, and I saw there was this little version of myself. I saw my self-image, which I'd never really noticed before. I saw that there was a way that I was seeing myself. And I encourage everyone listening to this, just close your eyes for a moment and just imagine in your mind there's an image of yourself as a person, not your spiritual self as a light, but your person self, an image, you know, you have face and hands and legs, just like you would in the mirror, if you look in the mirror now. In your mind, you'll see something that looks similar to your physical appearance. So I was just pulled into that, and I saw that clearly, and I saw myself, a little version of myself, in another realm, sitting on the beach, feeling depressed. At that point, and I was like, oh, that's weird, there's me down here and there's me up there, you know, and they're sort of the same. And then what happened is, I'm not quite sure how it happened, but spontaneously the little version of myself in this other realm, which you can see yourself, transformed of its own, and I saw myself feeling happy. The little me was happy, was peaceful, was excited, was, you know, feeling good feelings in the body and happiness in the heart, smile on the face. And I noticed that as soon as it changed, in that exact same instant, exactly at that moment, my physical being on the beach, sitting there in the wind, started to feel immediately better. My depression feeling lifted, heaviness lifted, and I started smiling, feeling wonderful. And I was like, oh my God, this is incredible. You know, it was just very, very swift, and it was a blessing. I thought, oh, this is amazing. All I have to do is change that self-image in a self-image, and my physical body changes, my emotions change, and then also other people respond differently to me, and the whole thing is different. And so, I was amazed. I kind of was like, whoa, and I jumped up and jumped back in the car and ran home and, typed this stuff up, the little discovery that happened. And it wasn't for a couple of years till I actually recorded the meditation. I was just doing it myself for a long time. And then I recorded the meditation. So the meditation you have is this kind of like a journey into that experience. And in the meditation, you start by walking down a corridor, you get relaxed, then you feel yourself going up the stairs, then you go into your inner world where your self-image is. And, you know, that's just one way of doing it. If you're having problems with that and not coming clear, what you can do is you can just say, just close your eyes, imagine yourself like you did just a minute ago, that you're a little version of yourself. You can even imagine it in between your eyes, you know, like in the third eye, there's a little version of you, like the little me, little image, imagination. And you just change it, you know. And in the meditation, I actually say, go into the golden light, go beyond the world, and ask, you know, God to give you visions, because I think that's better than us forcing anything. But, you know, just asking, you know, what is my highest self-image? What is, please reveal to me, you know, what is my highest form, my highest physical manifestation? And just allow whatever, you know, manifests in your imagination to be what it is. And then, you know, you breathe and you bring it back into the body like a jolt of energy, like a lightning bolt, all the way down into your feet. And get a little orgasmic shock coming through, that's what I feel. And then you just smile and carry on with your day, basically. And so, really, it's a simple thing. The meditation, I could probably do about 5 or 6 other meditations that do the same thing in a slightly different way. But the essence of it is, see the self-image like it is today, current self-image, then ask to be shown a higher version. What is your higher self? What does it look like? And we're talking about your physical self, not your light body self, because we're talking about your manifestation in the world version of you. And then you just see that vision, feel it, enjoy that, breathe into it, accept it as reality, really enjoy that, have a good feeling about it, and then just breathe it down into your feet. And that's it. So it's pretty simple, really. And yeah, and basically the more you do it, the easier it gets, the more powerful it gets. And then it just becomes one of those quick little practices. Just like, I actually have a meditation on that you can get. It's the 2-minute version, which is super short. You might want to just listen to the 2-minute version and not worry about the other one, and you'll probably find that might be the one for you. So, I think that's all I can say about that for now. And hopefully that was answering your question. Wonderful little practice. So we've got another question from Atista Tiza from Vancouver, British Columbia, Canada. How did you begin practicing discernment over judgment? How did you begin practicing discernment over judgment? Interesting question, Brother Nick. Anything you want to say about that?
Yeah, sure. I've got a good example this week. I've shifted islands. I moved over from Kauai for a while. I was the big island to do some consultancy and ran a little retreat. And I dropped right into a center that's been over here. I was involved in the visioning process of it 7 years ago when we first established Noni Land. And there's a complex social dynamic here with a lot of different people. This is a different island. The island, generally speaking, attracts a lot kind of rougher, more disheveled, misfit kind of a character, not particularly clean looking or impressive in any way, shape, or form. A lot of the individuals around, in fact, most people are quite strange, to be perfectly honest. But I found myself talking to billionaires, having a great time with, a very strange-looking fellow last week. Turns out he's a billionaire with this, that, and the other going on, and professors, scientists, quantum physicists, extremely intelligent, well-qualified, successful people in different disguises. And also at this sort of educational retreat center I am in, that is a farm as well, some very humble types. And there's one guy here who just looks after the chickens, and they call him, his name is Just Tom. That's what he likes everyone to call him, Just Tom. Not Tom, Just Tom. So Just Tom is riding around with the chicken on his back and a couple in the front of his bike carrier. He's obviously much more comfortable with chickens than he is people. He's a real loner and whatnot. And in the superficial way of judging things, because I've been, organizing and managing all these people on the ground, utilizing their energies, directing them to in big working bees around here, cleaning up different areas of this 40-acre site, and getting areas ready for planting, and lots of mulching in the orchards, and reclaiming areas and stuff like this. So it's been a very, very, very packed schedule. With this, like I said, teaching Qigong 3 times a day and all these other things going on, lots of stuff coming up, circle sharings and whatnot. And what I've observed this week as I've navigated this, the complexity of this situation in a masterful way, and really, 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 really scored big style in terms of the way I've impressed the owners who were hiring me, in terms of the feedback that I've had from the people that were on the retreat, in terms of the harmony and the productivity and the good vibrations and the, you know, the building and the building and the building and the building of the energy here ever since, five, 6 days ago when I first came. So it's victory all the way around. So I've just been reflecting on what has been the major, component in the way I've been comporting myself that's allowed these complex dynamics to unfold the gifts, even though we've had to navigate through conflict on several different occasions, and some of it extremely heated and very close to violent. And so what the main thing is this discernment without judgment through the feeling. One of the quotes that we often give you in the superhero training, it appears a lot in anything that I write, in the Sun Pop material, in the other stuff, and it used to be the headline, one of the headlines on the old site, is a quote from Huang Po, who is an ancient Chinese philosopher whose literature scales very, very, very highly. I think 900 in Hawking's scale of consciousness. And Huang Po says that he advises us to never confuse appearance with reality. So the appearance of these fellows, the appearance of the way they might be interacting together, there's a deeper reality. If you can use your sensitivity to scan a situation with your feelings, if you can use your mastery to be patient as you're feeling into situations and to communicate in a masterful way without the reactive the reactivity that goes with judgment, if you can stay in that feeling sensitivity and the patient side of things, then through the process the gift and the actual reality emerges. And it's constantly humbling over and over and over again how if we judge on the surface of things and react to that, how it just creates a mess and deprives us of the opportunity to receive the gift. So I'd say the essence of what I'm saying is use your sensitivity to feel into a deeper possibility. Use your mastery that you're gaining, your mastery over yourself that you're developing through all of these different practices. Use that mastery to patiently encourage communication, to keep your faith in that there is a gift despite the appearance here, and just let it come forth. And if you can just postpone judgment, or ideally eradicate it altogether, or at least if you skipped into it, recognize it, be aware of it, and forgive it, and forgive yourself, and immediately start extending unconditional love, or at least neutrality, then you'll find that all and every situation metamorphoses, if not very, very swiftly, definitely, gradually, but definitely, 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 definitely. And I'm getting to be quite a veteran of peacemaking, holding counsel for individuals that are in conflict. And today, like I was saying, I facilitated for two men that were absolutely going to rip each other's faces off yesterday. And I kid you not, it was a real guttural display of base animalistic masculine aggression. And today, just myself and these two guys. We'd worked it out, harmonious resolution, apologies, shaking hands, honoring and respecting of each other. We're inside of 15 minutes. And main reason, discernment, sensitivity, honest communication, patience, and postponing the judgment altogether.
Yay. Do you want to say anything, Taylor, about this non-judgment?
Well, this is a favorite topic of mine. And really, really good question. And certainly a goal for all of us and all superheroes to master is the ability to be able to shift into a place of non-judgment. And you know, I often find myself sharing about Jesus Christ hanging on a being having nails pounded through his hands and feet and hanging to die on a cross, and I think and you know he looks down and says, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." And I think to myself, all right, now that's a pretty high state of non-judgment there. And that's probably the worst possible situation. If you were going to have judgment, well, by gosh, it seems like you'd have every right to be pretty darn upset in that situation, especially when you were, let's say, unjustly, not only unjustly accused, but then unjustly put to death. That would seem to me, that would sum up, if there was going to be mass agreement for that, you have every right to have some judgment there, well, then that's the perfect scenario. So, you know, it goes back to that movie, that Crash movie I think we were talking about, which is such a great movie and demonstration of that, where our mind can instantly jump to making up all kinds of things the minute an individual walks into the room, sums up the whole of that individual, usually within a split second before you have anything to do with it. And so, you know, there's a few things. One is that I like to think of in these instances, and one of them is that all negative thoughts are an illusion. You know, similar to what Nick was talking about, that it's all the appearance. It's not that the world isn't actually how it appears. So if you're having a negative thought about anything or anyone, then right away you want to pretty much not call that into question as something that you want to judge. And just know that the mind, kind of how the mind works is, you know, by just as a survival mechanism, it sums everything up, you know, like any animal. You know, it looks around and says, I've seen that car before. I know, like a deer, that's probably something I want to not jump in front of, you know, and right away, there you go. And we it's kind of an automatic mechanism that the mind has to want to judge or put into categories or whatever, anything that comes into our view. So it really is a matter of just, like Nick said, suspending to notice that you may have judgment, and then to be able to shift out of the head, which is where judgment occurs, and into the heart, where there is no judgment, into our feeling state, into a state that connects us to where we are all one, that whoever it is that we're judging or whatever it is that we're judging is who we are. And from that place, we can instantly have compassion. We can have discernment to see it from a bigger space of being, to see it for what it really is, which is everything. You know, we're all one. And that's what we're all being asked to do in this time, in this year, is to shift out of our head, out of our mind, and into the bigger space of who we are, which resides in our feeling heart space, where there is only discernment, where there is the truth, and the truth shall set you free. And And judgment often comes out of a reactionary state. It comes out of a negative, you know, if you trace it back, there's probably some negative conversation in there somewhere or a start assessment. And so that's just a good little tip. You know, if there's any sort of negative anything, then, you know, you really don't want to get involved with that at all, because all negative thoughts are an illusion. And then it makes it pretty easy to shift gears and drop into the heart and really the bigger space of the soul, where you can see all as perfection and look, like Nick was saying, for what are the gifts, what are the, you know, if this is in my life, this is plopped down in front of me, or if this is happening, or if I'm hearing this, or whatever it is, like even if it's the worst information on the radio or whatever it is that you might want to have judgment about, to see what are the gifts there, what is, where's the light, where's the connection to divinity, and you'll find it. If that's your mission, you'll find it. And as a superhero, that is our mission. And that's what we want to proliferate on the planet. And like Nick is doing over there, you know, by his little peacemaking, is really looking for the divinity in people, connecting them to their divinity, and spreading that.
Yeah, and can I just give another little tip as well? For a start, one of the things that superhero training is founded upon is a deeper understanding of how the dynamics of creation all work together. And one of the quotes that we share with you from time to time is a quote from Love Without End, Jesus Speaks, a great book by Glenda Green, where she says, she's channeling Jesus or quoting Jesus, judgment and denial cause ruptures in the flow of life. And then the universe immediately fills those ruptures with the very things our objections denied. Judgment and denial cause ruptures in the flow of life, and the universe immediately fills those ruptures with the very things our objections denied. So what that quote does very brilliantly is give us insight into the nature of reality and how the universe, or the substance of reality, responds to our emotional feeling state and the organization of our mind. And so there's another great quote from A Course in Miracles, that the world was created in innocence. The world was originally created in innocence, but it's been destroyed and deformed through judgment and denial. And so what happens is that we contract out of this deeper connection to life and the understanding and acceptance of the simple fact that life is an eternal process. It's not a fixed, static thing. It's an eternal process that has a flow, and that flow is perfect already. And if we can be in harmony with the flow, if we can reorganize our mind so that we exit that small-mindedness and walk into the world of wonder, and this is Brother Michael's, you know, a great one for this. He's just, the reason why he's always cracking himself up, because everything, he just finds everything amusing, because it's all so wondrous, everything's so wonderful, even the simplest little things, and whether they're negative situations or positive situations, it's still a wonder. Evil, all manifestations of evil are a wonder, absolutely mind-blowing. So if we can exist, return to this natural state, a childlike state of innocent perception of wonder, that's completely out of judgment, and the feeling experience that goes with that that sense of wonder, and you can't help but feel love for someone, when you are amazed at just, you know, the, how amazing everyone is. I mean, just the, you know, over here, it's, you know, the characters are very, you know, they're almost larger than life, everyone is. And I often refer to the drama of life as the Muppet Show. And this is the Muppet Show with, you know, where everyone is slightly mutated. And it's, I mean, it's wondrous. I mean, it's just...
Oh, that's
right. So we can exist in this, you know, mildly amused state of innocent perception and wonder and allow the flow to flow. And we don't have to, you know, as soon as we shift out of that through judgment, we contract. What happens? We are overwhelmed by this situation that we're judging because we've caused a rupture in the flow of life, which was going to give us a gift. No matter, and I promise this is absolute 100% validated truth, I'm telling you now, from many, many, many experiences. And I know Taylor, for sure will agree with this, is that no matter how difficult and how challenging and how wounded and how wrong, quote-unquote wrong, or how, quote-unquote, bad someone's behavior has been, if you enter into a peacemaking process where the individuals are actually committed to forgiveness, and a returning to this innocent perception from this mature perspective of life, which sees it all as a flow, as an eternal flow, and all of this surface reality is just the appearance of things that's ever-changing, then you can receive the gift from the most dreadful and toxic, apparently on the surface, situations if you can stay out of that judgment and denial of the opportunity that is there inherent in any moment, any time, any place, anywhere.
Oh, what a trip.
Yeah, the best gifts ever.
And I love what Taylor just said. You know, that you see, we give you, you know, even though we might do calls that last for hours and, you know, presentations and this and that, which lasts for hours. We're never gonna like under deliver. We're always gonna over deliver. But within it, there's always these gems, absolute gems, absolute gems of practical, hardcore advice. And when Taylor just said there, all negativity is part of the illusion of life. Period. So isn't that just wonderfully simple, how simple and easy that is? Isn't that just a beautiful guideline? Oh, I'm being negative. Oh, I have a negative thought. I have a negative feeling. Therefore, I am in the illusion. What is the point of reinforcing that, of camping out there, setting your big I'm important camp up and doing your little occupy this movement to get people to agree with you, how bad the other person is, how wrong, and blah, 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 blah. You know, negativity, negativity, negativity. Useless. Recognize it for what it is. You are in the illusion. Now be a superhero and do something about it. What am I going to do? I'm going to forgive and release this situation. I'm going to take full responsibility for everything that appears in the illusion of life in my life, and that indeed is a great, great wonder. I'm going to apply the tools that I'm learning every week on this training to this situation. I'm going to breathe from that soul conscious awareness. I'm going to be patient. I'm going to practice ho'oponopono, and I am going to have the faith that I'm going to receive the gift here.
Hallelujah.
Praise the Lord, brother.
Praise the Lord.
Oh, yes, and we got a little question from Dorothy. Dorothy is asking us a wonderful question about this judgment.
Shout out to Dorothy.
Blessings to Dorothy, of course.
One of the seniors one of these seniors, one of the oldest of the superhero family. She's an elder in our tribe, and we really, salute Dorothy. Yay for Dorothy. Keep up the good work, sister.
Yeah, so Dorothy's wonderful, and she's asking us a question. How do you hold someone accountable without being judgmental? How do you hold someone accountable without being judgmental?
Well, I can answer that.
Yeah.
You know, I love accountability. It's one of my favorite pastimes. Being accountable, holding people accountable, talking about accountability. Because it really all comes down to, you know, what are we accountable for? What can we be held to account for? You know, it really is this whole thing about being in integrity, living as our word, you know, that we can be, you know, like I kind of know what I can count. I know unequivocally what I can count on Nick for. Like, you know, he's someone that I could easily turn my entire life over to, or Michael. You know, there's that level of accountability that is unspoken, that I can hold them to account. And they would, you know, they would be me in the matter of anything. And, you know, this is a really sacred act, accountability. And I really see it as that. I see it as an opportunity to empower another to be you in the matter of whatever it is that you're wanting them, you know, to take on accountability in. And there's, you know, I think I've said before that, you know, I one of my mentors in business always said that unless you're empowering someone else to do your job as you're doing it, you're not really getting your job done. And that to me is accountability, that be able to empower another to take on any mission and do it as good or better than I could. And I don't know that there needs to be any what was the question? Control or what was it again, Michael?
It was how to hold someone accountable without being judgmental.
Oh, judgmental, yeah. I mean, to me, I look at it as that I don't see any, to me, there's no judgment at all in it. To me, it's just it's an opportunity for expansion. It's an opportunity to kind of multiply oneself or empower another. And, you know, like, and especially when they aren't doing the best job ever or, you know, they don't know what they're doing or anything like that, that's all the better because it gives me an opportunity to contribute, them an opportunity to be heard, me an opportunity to see how, you know, perhaps I'm not doing a great job of empowering them or communicating. So I love that the whole dance that accountability is to me is one of empowerment and, you know, becoming present to contribution and generosity. You know, I don't see judgment in that equation at all.
Nick, Dorothy's adding to the question. She says, I'm not asking about people who are acting in integrity. She's asking how to hold someone accountable when they refuse to act in integrity and not be judgmental towards them.
Okay, let's give a practical example here, all right? Let's just assume that Taylor is my accountability partner. And I've had a problem with drinking too much alcohol for the last, you know, several years. I've been leaning on alcohol as a stress release, and I've agreed to stop drinking. This is my goal, to absolutely stop drinking, and Taylor is my accountability partner. Taylor asked me if I've been drinking this week, and I have to admit, yes, I have been drinking, and I was drinking quite heavily. And let's say this is the 19th time that I've been people to you know, honor my agreement and do what I'm saying I'm going to do, and therefore be in quote unquote integrity. Now, Taylor has the choice to remain neutral in her judgment, but still hold me accountable. You see, this is her, it's up to her and her ability, how she then manages her own thought processes. You see, the two don't necessarily go together. Just because I'm unable to, you know, do what I've said, and therefore I'm quote unquote out of integrity, it's got nothing, it doesn't necessarily mean she's going to automatically judge me. It's up to her whether she has the ability or not to stay out of judgment. But she can still hold me accountable. She can still remind me that this is not what we agreed on. And if I happen to be her roommate and I've, you know, vomited on the carpet again when coming in the morning, she has every right to communicate these things in a very heated way.
Yeah, I love that. I love that tall example. Yeah, that's beautiful, and that's perfect, because this I run up against this a lot with people that say they're going to do one thing and then don't and do another. And you're right. I find that going into judgment is the if you want to lose power instantly, that's what you want to do, is go into judgment. Or if you want to lose the ability to be able to shift circumstances, there's no power in judgment at all. You're just going to, you know, kind of shoot yourself in the foot and your partner. And, you know, for me, what really happens in that situation, like Nick described, is I really look at myself instantly. And what is it that I'm not providing? What's missing in my relationship with Nick such that this is not really working out? You know, like what there's clearly some disconnect. There's some way that I'm not being able to contribute. I'm not making the difference here. And then I would probably ask him, you know, I would ask him, like, Nick, what's not working here? What's going on for you that, you know, drinking is just something you keep going to, even though we've had this agreement that you wouldn't? And like, out of curiosity, not judging, but like, I really want to know. I'm interested now. I really want to find out. I know I don't know, because I thought we were all good. I thought he was on the program, no alcohol. And now he's just said it isn't. So I'm now curious to discover, and from him, you know, what's going on here. And not like he's bad, not like it's wrong, but like he's got the keys to the kingdom here, and my success in empowering him with his commitment to not drink relies on us being able to have this dialogue and, you know, be able to really take it to the next level. You know, I'm always kind of looking for that, like, how can we take it to the next level? Not like it's bad or wrong, but we haven't discovered something here, and together we're going to discover it.
Yeah,
and I think coming
point.
From that place, then it you know, it also doesn't leave Nick feeling bad or wrong or a failure at all. Like, to me, I'm taking on the role of being a failure. I mean, not like, you know, I mean, I'm really seeing for myself, wow, okay, you know, that we still haven't discovered the keys of the kingdom here. Let's do some more exploration.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't matter what anyone, but basically we're accountable to ourselves. You know, this way comes down to, we're accountable to God and we're accountable to ourselves, you know, ultimately, and to truth. And if someone just doesn't show up for some reason, that's obviously, we might have to have some kind of conversation if it's throwing up on the carpet every evening, you know, wake up in the morning and walk to the bathroom and slipping over the vomit again, you know, for the 15th time. that can get a bit tiring, you know. But you just have a sweet conversation, take care of it. But I think there's absolutely no reason whatsoever to have any judgmentalism at all towards someone if they're not doing it. Because, you know, if you think about what judgmental means, it means that I am right and the other person is wrong. That's really what it comes down to, is that I'm right and they're wrong. That's basically what we're doing when we judge people. And who's to say we're right? And who's to say they're wrong? According to who? According to what? You know, it's all arbitrary, really. And we're not here to be judging others and making ourselves right and making people wrong, or making them right and making us wrong. We're here for our personal evolution and our personal development. And so it really doesn't matter at all what anyone else does, frankly. That's how I look at it. Because if I was to go around, you know, being let down by people who didn't show up for things, I would probably be a very disturbed person, because the world is full of people. Like, there's some guy who was supposed to fix the car, phoned him up about 15 times, never got back, said he was going to do something, didn't do it. I could get negative, I could judge him, I could say, what's going on, the car's not fixed, blah, blah, blah. Or, you know, get someone else to do it, and then it's all taken care of, nothing to worry about, you know. So we don't have any need at all going around judging people, no matter what the situation is. It's just an ego trip, and there's just no benefit in it. That's why.
And the ego loves to judge. It has a judging positionality. Is naturally, you know, I'm over here, they're over there. So it wants to find reason to reinforce that positionality all the time. That's its nature. And the more like that we are, the more we're going to attract situations that disturb us and, give us the opportunity. Because what happens, judgment causes ruptures, and life fills the ruptures in with that same stuff. So the more we do it, the more we get of it. So if there's a lot of it, we know we've been doing it a lot. And it's an opportunity to let go of the old way of doing things. And that doesn't mean that you can't communicate heatedly if you've just stepped in the puke again for the 19th time. It's not you should not judge. When you've judged, when you've reacted and you've said something judgmental or thought something judgmental, that's a reaction. What a superhero does, as soon as they are aware that they're in a state of judgment, for their own health and to administer the most powerful medicine that is going to heal the situation, allow the opportunity to receive the gift, and not to attract similar situations, they are going to, as soon as they are possibly capable of, when they become aware of the way they've reacted, which might take a day to, cool down, or, you know, whenever it is, how many hours it takes to cool down and get hold of your mind again, they're going to reorganize their mind, move into this higher perspective, this greater context, which acknowledges the flow of life and the mutability of everything, and also the illusion of all surface manifestation, and on the clear an obvious understanding that everything that is happening in these times, especially the ones that, you know, that make us react so swiftly and heatedly, they are the very situations that we have the most to learn from, and the greatest gift resides within it. So there's no excuse for reinforcing positionality and staying in judgment. No justification whatsoever. All it is just the ego's little games. But we can't help but react in a heated way if the trigger is sufficient enough. So again, there's no judgment on you for doing it. On me, whoever is doing the judging, you don't want to be judging yourself. because you're judging again. Let it go, let it go, let it go, let it go, let it go. Surrender positionality, do your superhero practices to get you feeling better, and just like Buddha said with his last dying breath, do your best.
Yeah, this is so huge that it's huger than huge. This topic, it's just, there's so much energy and so much drama goes into this whole judging, you know, whatever that is, act, or, you know, so it's a really great intention to take on, is to really bring that to the forefront of your consciousness and intentionally gain mastery in it. There's just such a huge gift and such an example to set to others. You know, to be able to be in a really heated situation where the natural reaction or impulse would be to judge or do this or that or the other, and be able to shift out of that and stand in a higher space of non-judgment is just one of the greatest gifts of mastery that you can demonstrate to others. You know, I've been in the presence of it, and it's so inspiring. It's so inspiring. The whole energy shifts when one person can do that. The whole crowd just instantly. It's almost like it takes the energy, that downward spiral, just boom, it stops it instantly. If just one person can stand in a higher space of non-judgment and make a clear statement from there, it's just phenomenal. It's a phenomenal energetic occurrence that happens.
Yes, wonderful. I think it's actually the key spiritual practice, you know, for us to ascend in our state of consciousness, is just to give it up, because ego wants to be right, wants to have its position that what I think is right and everyone else is wrong, and it should be like this and it shouldn't be like this and why, blah, 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 blah. But, you know, if we can just say everything's happening as it's supposed to, it's all perfect in its own way. And at the end of the day, like, the question I ask myself is, What is my vested interest? Where is my focus? What is my commitment? Is my commitment to being right and being self-righteous and proving myself right all the time? Or is my interest in solving the situation and just remaining free and just being in unconditional love? You know, what's my commitment, basically? Most people, you know, the left brain is just interested in judgment and being right. So we have to really have a good look at ourselves and snap out of it. You know, it happens all the time. I have situations every single day where I could be judging people. Guaranteed, all the time. But, you know, it's like someone said they were going to do something and they totally dropped the ball, didn't do it, or did something completely different, screwed the whole thing up. It happens all the time. And the thing is, am I going to get angry about it? Am I going to tell them off? Am I going to get annoyed? Or am I going to just say, all right, well, you know, it's all good. So what are we going to do about it now? You know, what are we going to do now? How can we, you know, sort this out, change it around? What can we do to improve things? You know, that's it. You move forward. And if there's a person who consistently is throwing up all over the place and smashing all the things and, you know, breaking windows and stealing your car and everything like that, then you might have to avoid that person, frankly. You know, we don't have to hang around with people who are up to mischief all the time. We can discontinue our relationship with a lot of people if necessary. But definitely no need for judgment at all. So yeah, Dorothy's appreciating this. Thank you, and how useful it is. So yeah, blessings, Dorothy. You know, this is like, frankly, Dorothy, but to overcome this is a huge, you'll be so stoked. We all will. I mean, we're all work in process. We all have it a little bit one way or another. But this is a wonderful opportunity for your personal joy, for your well-being, for your success in life, for your just, you know, having the best day ever, best life ever. And it just, how I recommend it is every time you notice judgmental just realize the ego wants to be right and just surrender it to God, you know, and just say, I acknowledge that I'm being judgmental and I'm prepared to just give up being right. And instead of being right, be interested in being loving, you know. And if you can do that, then you're going to start feeling so good, you know. You have love and joy in your heart. Love and joy in your heart is so much nicer than anger and resentment and hatred and judgmentalism. So,
yeah.
Yes. Have fun with it, you know.
When Taylor said that this is, you know, huge, that was, you know, you could say that's an understatement. In all honesty, we could say the whole destiny of humankind hinges on whether or not we can demonstrate this ability. And that's why it was so integrated into Jesus's, core expression, that level of it. And when we look around the world at the dreadful things that have been, that are being done to children, Mother Nature, the way the indigenous cultures have been brutalized and massacred, and all of the, you know, unforgivable wounds that have been perpetrated on people, the way women have been treated and brutalized. You see, we are here. This is how much love we are being called to demonstrate. This level of love. And this is something, you know, that I've written about extensively in a lot of the stuff that I've written, is that we, you know, in order for us to demonstrate how great we actually are, we need an unforgivable wound to forgive. We need an unbeatable foe to defeat. You know, this is how great we are. The demonstration of love through forgiveness and the peace, that is the precursor to love. Through forgiveness, we find that peace. And then this letting go of this positionality and this judgmental, which is, you know, a form of attack and all the rest of it that the ego likes to get into. You know, it's all got to go. And it is really the fulcrum upon which the whole destiny of humankind rests. And that's why it's so up right now. And we see it, you know, the Arabs and the Jews. You know, you can keep going down the list of the examples that there is, where there is something, you know, unforgivable. The way the blacks have been treated, and the way they've, you know, treated themselves. You see? There it is. It's all there. And so will you step up to the plate in your daily rituals? Will you step up to the plate in your day-to-day life? The only thing that you need to be concerned with is, will you do it? Not are they still carrying out on with their bloody nonsense? Will I, suspend judgment and demonstrate these other abilities and perspectives, which is a superhero effort. It's a movement of superhero proportions and dimensions. That's why we call this thing superhero training.
And it really does come down to that, you know, in the final analysis, that is what there is to bring superhero-ness to, is that level of suspending judgment and transcending into a place where it's all good. And that you know, if you really look at as bad could be, so to speak, or as awful as, or as not good as not good looks, you know, as Nick said, it's the challenge has mounted to where it can only be what there is to do, what we're being asked to do, the evolution at hand. This is the evolution at hand. This very thing. It isn't anything else. I mean, we could talk about this, that, and all that. But this is it. It all comes down to this.
Yeah, it's huge. And, you know, like we said, it's a process. You know, it's a process. There's nothing wrong with you reacting. If Mike, you know, gets hot because the guy, you know, he's phoned him again for the 20th time and he hasn't come, or he's repaired the car, he's had to come back and fix it, and he's broken something else. You know, it's still Michael's responsibility to manage his state and move out of anger and judgment and into something else.
Mm-hmm. You know, the bottom line is, this is what I've come to the conclusion, is that getting angry and stressed out is just not at all pleasant. So, you know, people can say stuff that I could get, you know, annoyed about, but I don't see any point in getting annoyed about it because it's just nasty. I don't want to feel anger and resentment and hatred towards people. I don't enjoy it at all. Horrible feelings, you know, but the reason I can say that is because I've understood that the ego lives and survives on the juice of negativity. It sucks it up like a little monster, sucking up the juice. It loves it, loves being in resentment, loves judging people, loves being right. It loves it, you know. And so if our aim is to just accept ourselves, accept our animal nature, and accept, you know, the ego and what it does, we have to recognize that there's this part of us that's on a mission to feel bad all the time and in judgment, because it loves it. It's food. It wakes up in the morning, wants to find something to judge. First thing in the morning, wants to find it, because then it gets fed, you know. But I've just come to the conclusion that I don't like feeding monsters like that, and I don't like feeling angry and annoyed. It's just very unpleasant. So I'd rather just smile, you know, and you know, give thanks and blessings and be grateful for what is good in my life and know the benefit and just get on with things. It's just so much more pleasant, you know. And it's just, I think after a while, after enough suffering, we think, well, I've had enough suffering, thank you very much. I'd rather be happy.
Yeah. And that's a demonstration of mastery that Michael's talking about there, born out of practice, 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 practice.
Yeah, and I just want to add that now's a really good time to practice that, because it's spring, and spring is the season of the liver. And the liver, the associated emotion with the liver is anger, and one way we can really heal and let our liver expand now and be nurtured by the energies of spring is to not be angry, is to actually, you know, allow ourselves to be in peace and intentionally use the month of spring to eliminate anger from your life. You know, they've said that I've heard that the substance that's found in saliva of someone that's angry is a thousand times more poisonous than the most poisonous snake.
Wow.
For the liver. And, you know, so it's a real opportunity now for us to heal. You know, everyone wants to do these liver cleanses, do this, do that. Well, the best cleansing that you can do for the liver is not drinking olive oil and lemon juice. It's eliminating anger, especially now during this time of spring when the liver is wanting to expand and drink in, you know, the nourishment of the season. And so it's a really good time, you know, if you're going to look for an excuse. It's nice to have excuses to do things. Or a really good excuse to have that be your spring project, that you're just going to take on, really speaking sweetly and eliminating anger from your life just for spring, for your spring cleaning and nurturing of your liver and gallbladder. That's a good little project.
That's a wonderful project. Yeah, and you're just going to feel so much better. You know, I think it's just, you know, we can just make a decision. What do we want to feel? Do we want to feel really, really good? Or do we want to feel, you know, bad and sick? Choices are. So here we have it, you know. That's really all that can be said. So hopefully that was helpful. And it's a beautiful thing. And, you know, blessings to everyone, just to be happy, have a happy heart, have a smiling face, and just to enjoy yourself and enjoy life, because that's what it's all about. That's what the real superhero training is just to be happy and contented be a jewel of contentment, feel contented, and just to smile and give everyone blessings. And it's just so lovely, you know, and then you can just enjoy life. And then you're creating a beautiful future for yourself, and you're going to have lots of love around you, and everything's going to be wonderful. So, thank you, Taylor and Nick and everyone. I think we're good. It's been a good session. Look forward to sending this out to anyone who wasn't on the call so they can listen to that piece, especially about being judgmental and freeing ourselves from it. I think it's a very, very important thing.
Yeah, thanks, Dorothy.
Yeah, appreciate that, Dorothy, for asking that. Great, great question.
Yeah, I just want to point out, you know, it's questions like these that this whole call stems from. As you could see, we got on this call with absolutely no agenda whatsoever. We were all right. We were chit-chatting about, you know, what we were up to, and that's all nice and good. But, you know, really, it's you all, the superheroes, stepping forth these questions that really make the contribution that now we all have as a result of that. So I just really encourage you to not hold back, ask questions, you know, even if it doesn't seem like a good one, all that stuff, it doesn't matter. There's no question it's too big or too small. As you can see, every single question makes an enormous contribution to all of us. All of us have been served and contributed to in this call.
Yeah, absolutely. So keep asking questions. We're here for you. And actually, we had a chat with some people who were doing the check-ins, and they were saying that, you know, people have questions. And so just basically ask questions. That's what we're here for. And we love to give that personal touch to you, because otherwise, how are we going to have that personal connection? That's why we do these calls. So please, 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 if you have a question, just put it in the box. We'll talk more next week. So hopefully in 2 weeks' time from now, we'll have lots of questions to answer. All right. Well, thank you. Blessings. Any last words, anyone? Nick, Taylor, last thought?
No, I'm feeling pretty complete.
Me as well. Happy spring. Onward and upward.
All right. Enjoy the spring and have the best day ever, best week ever, and look forward to connecting with you all in 2 weeks' time. All
Yay.
Right. Yay.
Thanks, everyone. Bye.
Yay. Bye. Aloha.
Aloha.